You're going to learn a lot. I always do, which I think is the benefit of presenting. I know it's not easy to be in this seat, but it's such a good exercise. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about our teachings, and there are always people to help if you need help. My go-to book, every year if I'm presenting, I will dig it up first out of this book, Mind of Clover, and that's in the chat. Thank you, Tyler, for copying that. And it's by Robert Aiken. And I love it. I love what he has to say. He is my father's age. So, or was my father's age. So people may find that he's a little old fashioned in his approach and in his attitudes, but I find him to be very, very just humble and very interested in teaching and improving himself. I just find it really wonderful. So if you find something in there that you don't necessarily agree with, he will fix that later as you go on through the book. Trust me on that. My other favorite is Sitting Upright, Being Upright, excuse me, by Rev Anderson. And I put that in the chat. I first began to really understand the compassion that is embodied in the precepts by reading Being Upright. And his chapter on the 10th precept, I highly recommend it. It is very touching, and you may not think so the first time you read it. So I encourage you to read the chapter a second time, and it is very impressive what he's putting in that chapter. And then the final one I took a quick look at is Wholehearted by Koshin Paley Ellison. And the chapters are quick, very accessible, very much talking about everyday life as we live it. It just so happens that in this particular case, the way we're going to approach this precept came out of the chapter that he did on, part of the way that we're going to approach it came out of the chapter that he did on the 10th precept. So before we, this is good. We will have lots of time to discuss, but I want to set up the discussion question first. And so I will ask, Erica, would you mind just taking a pen and passing the bag? If we don't have enough, you can share, because this is a short exercise. It's going to take 2 minutes specifically. Take a pad, and if there are not enough pads, just take a piece of paper, because you just need a little piece of paper. And same thing for the folks in the cloud, if you will be ready with pencil and paper. Yeah, Post-it's fine. That's all you need. Everybody got pen and paper either in their hand or on the way. I don't know where it is. I did not look for it, but I'm afraid it might be in the shoe so box.
That's unexpected.
Is it? So who doesn't have a pen? Well, I could have given him a pen. Go tell him. Oh, yeah, here he comes. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so as we're getting pen and pencil ready, Here are the parameters. It's only going to take 2 minutes. I will time it for 2 minutes. So that should tell you that this is off the top of your head. Don't think too hard. No one will see what's on your piece of paper unless you share it. Nobody has to know. If once you put it down on paper and we start going through this discussion and you don't like what you wrote, you can change it. It's not a big deal, okay? But here's the question. Write down 3, maybe 4. Don't go more than 5 or you're defeating the purpose. But write down the top 3 or so things that you value in your life. For example, family, job, so I can support my family, health, spiritual path, climate change, social justice. Pick the top 3 or so. Now, and I have to time you. So I'm going to time you now. Okay, so we have 1 minute. If you're ready, push your hand up here. Are you ready? You need more time? Looks like people are ready in the cloud and in the Zendo. You ready? Okay, so we'll get going. This precept, if you can practice this precept in your life, you've got them all down. That's my humble opinion. So what we're going to be talking about really is what Bodhidharma said, and then I'm going to talk about what Dogen said, and I'm going to talk about that in 2 parts. And then there's just my own experience and my own opinion. My opinion, if you got this down, you got it all down. This precept goes all the way back to the very beginning of the Kyoju Kaimon, because on the first page, we go through an act of contrition. And then with a contrite heart, we take refuge in the 3 treasures. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, and I take refuge in the Sangha. And so when I started to think about this precept, it begged the question for me, if I'm going to take refuge in these 3 treasures, if I am going to call them my home, how then does one disrespect them, slander them, however you want to define the word defame? How does that happen? If you're taking refuge, how does it happen that you should actually defame these 3 treasures? Robert Aiken says he calls the act of taking the 3 refuges, which, by the way, we do in the Kyoju Kaimon every Tuesday evening when we read it. We do it every Sunday morning as well, for those of you who don't come on Sunday morning. And on Sunday morning, it's a little bit more detailed. There's got a little bit more information under each taking refuge. But he calls the act of taking the three refuges, saying out loud this prayer, he calls it the Jukai ceremony in brief. And Jukai is what we're going through next Sunday when people actually decide in front of others to formally vow to follow these precepts as best they can. He says, each time we mindfully recite this prayer, we are vowing to receive, maintain, and manifest the three treasures as ourselves. And to me, the word manifest is important. At least in my own practice, I hear that come up throughout many of our teachings, manifesting, actualizing, taking what I learned from the cushion and bringing it into my daily life. That's what I mean by manifest. And so if you do the Three Refuges prayer, and if you do not manifest the triple treasure in your life, you are breaking this precept. So in short, that's how you can actually break this precept. And we're going to find out more about that. The thing is, with this 10th and final precept, the Kyochu Kaimon, I hope I'm not showing disrespect, but it's long. You know, it takes close to 15 minutes. I think it's the longest thing we read on a Tuesday night. Maybe Genjo Kōan comes close, but not the same. So you start it on page 27. In one page, you take the three refuges, and then you go through 1, 2, 3, 4 more pages of reading. And finally, you can see the end. And here's do not defame the three treasures. I've been at this now a good 10 or 11 minutes. We're all trying to read in unison. We're all listening to the Kokyo. The end is in sight. And then Bodhidharma comes up with, in the realm of the one, holding no concept of ordinary beings and sages, is the precept of not defaming the three treasures. And it goes right over my head. And I rarely think about it until comes the year when someone asks me to present this. And I figured out that the way you have to say it is like this. In the realm of the one, holding no concept of ordinary beings on the one hand and sages on the other, is the precept of not defaming the three treasures. So in other words, I heard this very message Sunday morning. I hope you intended for us to hear this, but this is, you got to practice like you're in the realm of the one. We're all one. We are all individuals. I'm not saying that we're all the same, but we don't want to have ordinary beings here and sages here. Any of the commentary that you read on this almost always points you to the teacher-student relationship. I think it's for any relationship. You don't want to have yourself here and your partner here. You don't want to have yourself here and your hairdresser here. Yoga teachers, auto mechanics. There's not two. We're all in this together, is the point. As it relates to the student-teacher relationship, I'm painfully aware that my teacher is 10 feet away as I talk about this. But I'm not just talking about Damien. I'm talking about Chosen Bays, Hogan Bays, Huho. I think his name is Larry Huho Russell. Reb Anderson, Achan Roshi. I'm talking about all of them. I mean, when was the last time I can remember a Rohatsu in which afterward, a few of us sat around and said, what did Hogan say to you the last time you saw him? And somebody else would say, he said that to me too. I can't believe he said that. I had no idea what he was talking about. Well, what did Buho say to you the last time you saw him? This was the same Rohatsu, two teachers. He said the same thing to me too. What was he? I can't believe it. So the point I'm trying to make is teachers are human and they are every bit as human as we are. And I am not talking about the ridiculous, salacious sexual misconduct and drug addiction and alcoholism, although that exists as well, and that makes them very human. I'm talking about giving the finger in traffic. I'm talking about, you know, cursing your computer. I'm talking about all the little things that you and I do all the time. They do it too. And if you're lucky, you get to witness that. And the reason why I think being able to witness that is so precious is that it's like, I see you and I know that you are human and I know that you are the same as I am. And I feel so lucky to have been able to witness that. Robert Aiken puts it this way. On this very topic, you must be careful. Old man Bodhidharma must not be allowed to get the upper hand. There is no ordinary being or sage. There is no leader or follower, no Roshi and no student. The Roshi must be ready to hear that he is a male chauvinist. The student must be ready to hear equally disagreeable stuff. So this is what gets me back to what I heard on Sunday, and I heard it a few Sundays before this as well. And I don't know if I'm expressing it correctly, but try to cultivate a practice in which you recognize that we are all one in this world. We are all different. And the metaphor is Indra's net, where in each little knot in the net, there is a jewel that reflects each one of us and that we reflect the light and the beauty in all of us. We are interdependent. That is the world that I believe we are in. And if I work hard, someday I will actually see that. Sometimes I think I do see little glimpses of it. So Dogen comes up again, you know, end of the Kyoju Kaimon, and here comes this other sentence that is so hard to understand, but what does it matter? It's the last one. To do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world. And the merit of this becomes the source of all wisdom. What the heck does that mean? I read this over and over and over. How do you do something without copying anybody else? Hasn't everything already been done? What is original anymore? I can't. I'm not smart enough to come up with something original. Kept reading it over and over. And this is where my Judeo-Christian background comes in. Because after reading it over and over four or five or six times, I started to hear, ye are the light of the world. Now, some of you may recognize that as Matthew chapter 5. I don't want to become heavy on Christianity in this talk, but it had a lot of value for me, especially when I went, that's at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. And I went to, I, read through to the very end, and Jesus goes on to say, ye are the light of the world. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Now, those last few words can be heavy to some of us. But I put those two comments together, Jesus and Dogen, and I took out the heavy Christian part and I made it a little bit more Buddhist. And this is what I got. To do something by yourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world. Ye are the light of the world. Let your light shine. Do good works and go out and do the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha proud. That's what I think Dogen is saying. And I find that easy to understand.
Amen.
I'm all for easy to understand in Buddhism. The only thing I can do by myself without copying anybody is to be myself, to be my true self, to be myself that's way down in here. I will never forget a Sanzen, a Dharma interview I had with Gyalmyo. We're going back now 7 or 8 years. And I said very clearly, I don't even know who I am. And over time, if you keep working at this, you will find out. I believe I will find out. Not there yet, but I'm further along than I was. And it's not easy. This is a simple concept, but it is not easy. Even Hongzhi says in Silent Illumination, I wish Bruce were here because this is his favorite line. You must purify, cure, grind down, and brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. And some of those last few words are very important. Fabricated. Fabricated. That means you are lying to yourself. And these things that you do are apparent habits. They're not real. They're just what looks like things that you do. And so if I keep working on this, I mean, this is the essence of the precept to me. If I keep working on this, I can slowly peel away that garbage, that compost, that fertilizer that is covering up my true self. I also dipped into Kjogan Carlson's commentary on the precepts, which we have on the website. And he says, we have to be deeply authentic. We have to be ourselves completely. Nothing more or less. Being ourselves is something no one else can do. It's our one clear purpose on this earth. How simple. You know, think of all those existential questions you had in your teens and your 20s. And my purpose in life is so clear, to be myself. If we don't do that, we are breaking this precept. Very simple, easy to say, hard to do, but we have tools. And here comes a very good one, when Dogen says, criticize nothing, accept everything. Once again, I played with those two sentences, two lines, four words, five syllables per line, over and over and over. I wrote them upside down. I wrote them backwards. I looked for them in kanji. I could not find the kanji. If somebody knows that, maybe you could put it in the chat. I looked for it in, I don't know what you call it, but the English version of Chinese, I couldn't find that. I don't know how to pronounce it in Chinese. But there it is. And so I thought, you know, the only way I'm going to be able to talk about this with any integrity is to try it. So I did. Criticize nothing, accept everything. And I have tried it now for several weeks. I think I started trying it in April. And first of all, things get very quiet. But I remember when I was out walking with a dear friend who practices Buddhism, and I can't remember if we were at Fernhill or if we were in Tualatin Park. These are lovely nature parks here in Southwest Portland, west of Portland. And we were laughing and chatting and talking and walking through nature. And I was saying, you know, got this person in my mind and I can't get her off my mind. She drives me crazy. I don't like what she says. I don't like what she does. And I just can't get her out of my head. But I said to my friend, I said, you know what? I've been practicing. Criticize nothing, accept anything, accept everything. And I said, you know what? When I do that, criticize nothing, accept everything, I can do no wrong. I can do no wrong. And she said, and she can't either. And I said, what? But that's the way it is. If I am practicing, in fact, this is the tool for the precept. Criticize nothing, accept everything. If I am doing that, I can't do anything wrong, and neither can anybody else. This is how I get to my authentic self. This is how I peel away all the dirt to get to my true self. If you go to the Dharma Rain Zen Center website, drzc.org, and search on that, criticize nothing, accept everything, you will come up with a Dharma talk given by Shintai, and she is a dear friend of our community and a Dharma sister of Domio's. And she gave a talk on her experience with this teaching. And her experience, clearly it comes from Dogen, but she also used for a tool, a book entitled A Complaint-Free World. And it's by a guy named Will Bowen, B as in boy, O-W-E-N. And he is a Christian pastor. So she was using that model. And the model actually is, you start out criticizing nothing. You don't get to complain about anything. And you have a bracelet on your left hand. I got tired of the bracelet. I've moved mine. I use a rubber band. It's much easier for me. So I put the bracelet on and I mark my calendar. And the next time I criticize or complain, it comes off this arm and goes to this arm and I have to mark the calendar again. And then a day or two will go by and I do it again. And it comes off this arm and it goes to this arm and I have to mark the calendar again. And the idea is you're trying to get 21 days of not complaining. And according to Will Bowen and Shintai, it'll take you about 4 to 5 months to do that. But that's just another way to use the tool. I'm actually going to continue to try and do this and get more serious about marking my calendar. But I do find this very helpful. I find that it's a practice I really want to keep doing. Close to the end, 5 or 6 more minutes, and then we have time to talk. I also read, just because I wanted to read everything, Roshi Kennett's commentary on the 10th precept. And I don't know that I can recommend her precept commentary, because first of all, I did not read the whole commentary. Secondly, as Domyo tells us, Roshi Kennett is Domyo's Dharma grandmother, and she has a rich Anglican background, which is why we are probably the only lineage that has litanies with Buddhist commentary. She has a heavy Anglican background. And so I read the commentary on the 10th precept, and I thought there was some real good in there, but the Anglican language was very heavy. And so once again, I took it out and I kind of mushed it around and made it sound a little bit more Buddhist. And this is what it comes out to be. And I love it. And I wanted you to hear it. The Buddhas and all the ancestors don't always do things in the normally accepted ways that we would recognize in our world. They are not individual, and yet they are not necessarily the same as each other. Each expresses the truth in his own way, as do all things. They do that which they do in their way and express the Buddha within it. Do not criticize the way of another. Do not call it into question. And I want to read that again and add another word for emphasis, because this touches me so much. Do not criticize the way of another. Do not even call it into question. Look within it and see the Buddha. Look with the mind of a Buddha, and you will see the heart of a Buddha. It's just like my friend said, when I am practicing, criticize nothing, accept everything, I am practicing this precept, and I can't do any wrong, and neither can you. So I wanted to quote one more up and coming Zen teacher. This goes in the category of teachers are everywhere. And her name is Lizzo. Cassie. Where's Cassie? And Shoketsu. Shoketsu should be here. And I will give you a warning. It's four lines. It has the B word in it. So if you have impressionable children around, I will count to three. One, two, three. If you know these words, you can say them right along with me. I know you do. You give it a head roll. If I'm shining, everybody gonna shine. I was born like this. Don't even gotta try. I'm like Chardonnay, get better over time. Heard you say I'm not the baddest bitch, you lie. And so what I'm saying is, if he didn't get that, if I'm on this path, if I see you on this path, I hope I do. If I'm really trying to work this precept, I am one seriously bad Buddha bitch. And so are all of you. We were born this way. It's deep down inside of us. And if we work on it, it gets better over time. So I will pause there and see if you have questions. And then we can also go into a little bit of formal discussion if you want to do that. Thank you.
Question?
Yeah.
I think the artist had too much attachments to her.
I did. Oh, the question is, yeah, you should sit here to ask your question, but that's okay. The question is, did the artist Lizzo, first of all, do not.
We lost your sound.
Oops. Yeah.
So I don't know where I lost it, but I'll ask the question again. I'll say the question again, which is, did the artist have too much self-attachment in this four-line commentary? And I would say no more than I do or anybody else. Clearly, I really doubt. I don't know how much of a Zen Buddhist Lizzo is. But what I'm saying is, when you're ready and you're open, you see the teachings everywhere. Everybody can be your teacher. And who would have ever thought that this song is in my warm up in Zumba class, which I do twice a week. And if I'm shining, everybody gonna shine. And I hear it over. I've heard it for months. And all of a sudden, there it is. She's talking Zen. So I think the direct answer is no more than any of us. Oh, Leah.
Okay, unmuted. Hi, Jenny Rio. I love this talk tonight. Thank you for presenting it so well. The criticize nothing, accept everything, and your exercise of not criticizing anything for 21 days, or not yours, but you know, that exercise that you say. And I feel like I would have to take a vow of silence for 21 days. Like I would have to literally put a sign around my neck. I've actually played this out in my head. So this isn't, you know, I have to put a sign around my neck that says vow of silence, right? And then just not talk. Would that work? Because I'm not sure if there's another possible way I could do this. Like in the day-to-day conversations that I have, I bring up shortcomings. I don't know where the line ends for what is criticizing and what is just like communicating that you have to do with other people. Help me with this, please.
Yeah. To me, this kind of goes back. This is what I mean when I say if you practice this precept, you're kind of practicing all of them. It reminds me of the precept of do not speak dishonestly, because Bodhidharma says, in the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, putting forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly, because everything that comes out of our head is a story. But you're close. And I will say, you know, I'm retired. I have a lot of, I'm introverted. I do a lot of things at home. I do things with friends. I'm blessed with friends. But I guess what I'm saying is, because I don't work, I'm not around others as much as, say, someone who works. But what I have noticed in practicing this is when I am with someone who complains, boom, I'm right there, right with them. It's very easy to slip into that. But what the practice did for me was, it, soon as I found myself criticizing and got used to this practice, I would stop and I would literally think, how can I say this differently? And I think that's the point. How can I say, without complaining about the heat? Boy, it's kind of hard to dress in this weather, isn't it? Because it's particularly warm today. That's not a very good example, but I think you know what I mean. This is a practice that will slow you down and get you to think about other ways of communicating and other ways of being. And we've all been around someone who either has a permanent or temporary bad humor, you know, constantly whining and complaining. And, you know, nobody really wants to be around that. So this is a practice to get you farther and farther away from them. And I think it'll make you happier, frankly. I think if you stop complaining, you'll probably be just a little bit happier. Tyler.
Yeah, thank you for focusing on these last couple lines. I've really struggled because I don't like that line, criticize nothing except everything. Because my reading of it, and I think that you've given some nuance to what the reading is, I don't think we should accept everything that's happening, right? Like there are things that happen that deserve to be critiqued because they're maybe affecting other people. Or like, and I feel like maybe I'm like understanding like what you just said, where you can like reframe how you see something or how you speak about something. But I'm just also not willing to just accept everything that happens and just being like, well, I'm not going to engage with it because I accept it. I accept things do happen. You can't unhappen them. But critically engaging with things, I think, is important. And I guess that's how I was always reading this line. As I thought at first was saying, don't criticize the Dharma or don't criticize. And like, we're always taught to critique or like doubt what we're doing or whatever. But I've struggled with this line every time I've had to read it, which has been a bunch this time through the precepts. I appreciate you bringing some different light to it for me because it's going to let me think about it differently.
This is the way I look at it. If I am not willing to, this is about being in the moment. That's all it is. If I am not willing to accept this very moment as it is, I am not able to be intimate with life, much less intimate with other people. You know, I always say this, I'm older than a lot of people here. I don't have that many moments left. I don't want to miss one. I'm not telling you that I like the moment. I'm telling you that I am here and this is the moment and this is what is going on. That does not mean that in the next moment, I might start thinking of a solution or I might start reframing my words so that I can talk to somebody about what just happened or, you know, come up with some important, if it affects some important value in my life, which we can get to, that I want to focus on. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not saying don't take your brain out and put it aside. I'm just saying stay in this moment. That's all I'm saying. Do you want to add to that? I don't know if I'm being adequate.
Pretty good.
Okay. I mean, I remember, speaking of you, a long time ago, I think you were talking about the present moment, or you were talking about reality or seeing life as it really is in the realm of the one. And you said it was luminous and perfect. Perfect does not mean that it's the best. Perfect means it is. It is here right now, done in this moment. At least that's what it means to me. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, it really is. It reframed it. I mean, a certain somebody we know sometimes chains herself to boats because she doesn't accept everything. And so like, that's where my mind went, but I think you've nuanced it differently. That's not what you're saying. It's not saying we have to accept everything that's happening in the world at all, but that there's, yeah. So that's just where my mind was going. So I appreciate the, adding the nuance.
It's subtle.
And I think Jinri did a great job. So I don't even really need to add anything, but I do think this is a really important point to make because I think like you, Tyler, I think this can be misunderstood and it can undermine someone's faith in the Dharma if they think that that's what we're saying. to just everything's be passive fine. And stupid and everything's fine and therefore you'll find some peace. I mean, that's so in this case, I like to say it's you are right to doubt what you think it means. So it doesn't mean that. It can't mean that, or Buddhism would be bullshit. So then what does it mean? So then it's a pretty rich thing to engage with. But I think you're right on in that it's about our orientation to life. I don't know. I mean, I think about it in terms of like, this is going back to the basics of dukkha. Dukkha is resistance to how things are.
That's it.
It's like this, it just shouldn't be like that. When it's like, should, shouldn't, whatever.
It is.
Here we are. Mm. So it's actually, it's when we can fully accept this, that we can actually be effective and on.
Thank you. You know, that point about dukkha, that is an excellent point. We all know when something awful is going to happen and it's inevitable and you have to get this root canal done. And you know, I've got back surgery scheduled and it's tomorrow and the pain and suffering comes in worry and resistance and digging your heels in. Relax. This is the way it is. And you can deal with it so much better. So the question about what we wrote down, and if you want to talk about them, we can, but I did get the idea from this book. This is right in the middle of the chapter, and Koshin Paley Ellison is talking. He says, my friend Frank was giving a talk at our Zen Center. And at one point he paused and said, I wonder how many of us are actually living according to what we say is most important to us. It's a fabulous question to keep in front of us. You know, and this is where the authenticity comes in. This is where our purpose in life comes in. You know, this is not a new idea, the three most important or three most valuable things to you. You know, executive coaches, I had to coach do this with me once, and therapists will do this with you. You draw the pie and you divide it into so many sections. I don't know how many sections they give you, but you identify how you're spending your time on work, on care of self, on family, on the other things that are important to you, and it makes you realize how you're living. Now, I didn't do this exercise tonight, but when I read about this, and I was in the middle of, you know, I'm going to stop making excuses for it. I always have things to do, always. It is a wonderful life that I have, but I can get overwhelmed. And as I was thinking about this exercise and just kind of every now and then touching base with what's important to me, and I remember when I retired and there was a specific thing that was important to me that I do when I was retired because I hadn't had time to do it well in life so far. And when I remembered that and I got caught up in what was making me anxious and that was making me feel overwhelmed, and it was that very thing. Well, if that's important to me, what's the problem? Just do it. Do what's important to you. So I don't know if anybody had a revelation. Or maybe I should give you a minute to think about a revelation when you wrote down those things. Usually, I think when you do the formal exercise, it's like 7, 8, 9, 10 things. I don't know. I only allowed you to do 3. But Are you really living your life according to what's important to you? Is the question. Susan.
So you gave us this paradox, right? Or Dogen gives us this paradox that I was thinking about this a little earlier about feeding the beast, you know, feeding the small s self by griping all the time and the bitching and complaining is feeding the wolf or the fox or whatever. And not wasting our time, wasting our precious moments is the same thing, really. It's we're squandering, disrespecting the valuable thing we have here. And yet, the time we piss away, the time we spend complaining, the small self terrorizing our friends and family, you know, is not the three treasures, the bright pearl. So when we defame that and go, oh, I'm such a piece of crap, you know, I'm wasting my time, I'm throwing my life away, all I do is complain about my friends, I'm projecting my stuff all over the place, we're defaming the three treasures.
Yes.
I can't get away from it, can you?
No,
there's no place to go.
But you know, criticizing yourself, you brought up something else I was thinking about. Now, I can't remember if I read anything about this or not, but that negative self-talk. This thing way down deep inside doesn't deserve that. Doesn't even know what it means.
And so, what is it they talk about? Well, the unattained Buddha, you know, the sad little Buddha. The Buddha who has a tummy ache, the Buddha who's misunderstood Buddha. So we neglect that. We disrespect that at our own peril. Mm. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Two minutes. We got time for a quick question. Yes.
Okay. So my three things, the things that I value are being alive, the world / everything that's alive, that's not me. And then maybe like inner peace or like something that has to do with taking care of myself. And I did that exercise with the therapist, so like the value charts, all the stuff, and like that's what I value. And I just like I replace waste sanitary sewer pipes in the city of Hillsborough for a living, and it affects the people who live on the street who flush their toilets on that street. And it just feels it's boring. It's just so boring, and it's kind of smelly. And I just hate it sometimes. It's just so how am I living to my values by doing this? Like, and you know, I got my degree to dedicate my whole degree is I'm dedicating myself to the environment and all living things, everything that lives in this world. That's like why I got into like the, you know, the work that I do. And I'm like, how is this living to my values? And I guess, you know, maybe I'm shooting too big, too large scale, but I'm trying to accept that I can, there's got to be a connection, or like somehow we can do these mundane tasks that feel like they don't have any effect, but still meet your values. Because I feel a little trapped. Like I can't quit my job and go live in a monastery because I have to save up for my retirement. You know, I have to, like, I have commitments in this society that I live in, you know, and I'm married and I want to, you know, contribute to that. And it's very important to me. And so I don't know what my question is.
So my career was sales and marketing. Talk about sewer. Now, I happened to love it. I loved it. And I was good at it. But of course, everybody thinks you're lying. My motto was that marketing, it is the truth. If you're doing it right, it is true. You do not lie in marketing because you destroy your credibility. But my point is, I really helped salespeople. They were downtrodden. They were busy. They had families. They may or may not have an education like mine or yours, but they needed help getting their job done. And that's what I did. And that made me feel good. We didn't get to this because I skipped it because of time, but I believe very strongly in looking for the love and the beauty in the world. And I'm telling you, I see it. I see it. I believe it's there even in the sewer. I swear I do. Think about clean water services. Come on, clean water services. That's marketing. But we know what they are. They clean up sewage. But these are all beneficial things that promote and support life and a healthy planet and living things. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Can I make a real quick comment?
Sure.
I build affordable housing for a living, and I'm building affordable housing in Hillsborough right now. And if you didn't do your job, I couldn't do mine. I mean, so thank you for this.
Well, that's the other thing about all, that's the other thing about all being one. We are all one, but we are interdependent. You guys depend on each other to get your jobs done, which supports humanity, it supports a clean environment, it supports all living things. Do you want, we can talk after, because it's, I've got 9:03. Is that okay? Okay. I just ended up this way, but we might as well all do this. We offer the merit of this Sangha discussion to all so that they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Pragya, Paramita. Thank you.